Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Thanks to BetterHelp for supporting FilmSack. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/filmsack and start living a better life today.
What are your names?
Tucker and Walker.
Well, Tucker and Walker, we're missing 3 bags.
What's in them?
None of your business.
Suits, socks, $100 million, the usual stuff. Travis here was smart enough to bring along a tracking device.
You thought of everything, didn't you? Everything except what's happening now.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 510. And my name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Tango Tango. What's up, Tango Tango Dunaway?
One more tango, please. Oh, hi.
Hi.
And welcome to Rocky Mountain High, the highest gift store in Colorado. Elevation-wise, that is. Marijuana laws have taken a turn since we took on that slogan during the 90s. Now, how may I help you? Do we have any discount harnesses of questionable quality? Why, yes. Yes, we do. It's one of our top sellers. We like to call this particular model the "so you think your girlfriend is sleeping with your coworker and you want to get rid of her and blame said coworker, but you need it to look like an accident. Oopsie loopsie. No harness." Yeah, you'll take that. All right. Would you like that gift wrapped? No. And might I also recommend a knee brace to really sell the whole story? Okay, I'll just throw that in at a 5% discount. Anything else? A stuffed toy puppy. Who's this for? The girlfriend? You aren't going to let this stuffed toy puppy fall to his death as well, are you? You promise? You're going to keep it safe. Okay. This is a freebie, but I better not find it at the bottom of a gourd someplace covered in dead girlfriend. Gross. All right. Will that do it for today? Can I interest you in a human sled that looks like Sylvester Stallone? It's reversible. Also, we have a 60-year-old rope on sale. No? How about some bat repellent? No? Okay, then. That'll be $5.69. What's this? Oh, sorry, sir. We don't accept unexchangeable denominations of $1,000 bills. That's all you have? Okay. So I'll just be taking back my toy puppy now, you piece of shit. Randy, show this gentleman out the door and down the cliff.
No problem.
Wow. That was great. Your entire thing just basically is the first scene, which is great.
Yeah. Well,
that's good.
I'd
that's
like probably, to keep it simple.
Some people may have only made it that far, so we did it. We did him a service. Also with us, Randy, your northern exposure is exposed. Jordan.
Yeah, don't use my name, damn it.
Oh.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Good. Brian.
Randy.
You are going to someday make a person a fine wife, especially if they see you bake a cake. But to be an even better wife, you're going to need to pick up my new book, 3 Rules for Wifing on the Mountain. Ooh. A good mountain wife makes sacrifices, so if you want to avoid having to take a few bullets in the small of the back to prove your worth, you'll want to follow along. Number one, when you're about to leave the house because you have somewhere to go, that's when you should stop and brush your horse. Mm. By the way, bonus rule, name your horse Bucket Chick. Yep. Number two.
No.
Never go around a peak when you can climb over it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to tell you this. Everyone knows. Mm. Number three. When living in snowy mountains, never employ the use of ATVs or snowmobiles. However, do learn how to ride a man like a snowboard. Human snowboards are perfect because a man's backside is naturally waxed and his topside has a handy grip that you can hold on to.
Ew. Oh, that was it. That was three? Was
that no, that was interesting.
Oh,
was
on tight.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Gross.
Nicely done. Also with us, and finally, choking myself here, Brian Stalactite Mother Effa Ibbot.
Oh, wow. Well predicted. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We've leveled off at about 20,000 feet, and we're going to maintain a cruising altitude right here over the beautiful Rocky, in quotes, mountains. If you look to your left, you'll see the world's oldest gift shop. You heard about that number one. You're looking for 60-year-old rope or some 2-year-old power bars, this is the place for you. Keep looking out your left window and you'll see the mysterious Cave of Mystery. Legend has it that if you go out the bottom of this cave, you somehow pop out of the top. Despite the fact that there's only one teeny tiny opening at the top, you'll find it's the most well-lit cave ever. And check out those natural formations. They put the tight in stalactite. Next on that side is the Ladder to Nowhere, where you hear an American faking a British accent with a British woman faking an American accent. And if you look to your right, you'll see the bleeding corpse of my co-pilot. Oh, wait, that's just up here. Have a good flight.
Oh, my God.
That captain had no soul. He leans over and just pops that dude in the head and then just looks at him with disdain like, I've been waiting for this my whole pilot life.
You suck as a co-pilot.
I have that actor on a certain list that we're going to talk about later.
Yeah. Oh, I have a feeling I know what list. When the Walls Fell. We'll get there soon enough, everybody. Don't you worry. The movie is Cliffhanger, and if you're thinking, hey, I thought you guys did that one. No, we've had it on the firing block about three times, and then it kept getting yanked. So
yeah, falling off a cliff.
Yep,
it's terrible.
No more yanking.
Yeah, I actually keep a very, very short list of movies that I figure when we finally end Film Sack in the 2040s, it'll be the last one because we'll have to seek it out.
Yeah,
and Cliffhanger is on that mental list. Like I figured, oh, this might end up being our very last episode.
Yeah,
you know, someday
it does feel that way.
Had such a time.
I agree. It's been a huge pain to get it, but we finally seen it. I didn't see it in theaters. I think this is one of the big surprises of the week is that Brian Dunaway's first viewing as well, right?
No.
Oh, I thought you had. I thought you had for some reason.
You're thinking about next week's film, but Cliffhanger, I've enjoyed many times.
Oh, why did I think that? Well, it's my first time.
We've been talking about the other movie coming up that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, but you see it before.
Saw it in the theaters in 1993, and it gave our Australian friend panic attacks that very first scene.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes. Freaked her out to the point where, she nearly just walked out of the theater after that first part, but we had to talk her down basically after the
movie. Dude, admit
that opening scene is so impactful.
I'll admit they got me a little bit. I'm not one for heights, and I can't imagine that on a big widescreen theater. Just that's pretty freaky. Like
it is brilliant. It's one of those things like when you're watching a movie where somebody has to swim underwater for a long period of time, you find that you subconsciously hold your breath.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I did the same thing with this one. Even on this watching, even knowing what happens, I'm like,
My wife knows.
It is very effective. It is such a cheap, easy thing that they've done, but this is what Stallone does. Stallone is, you could say what you want to about, the accuracy, how accurate things are or whatever, but he always makes you feel something. And
I don't know if it was him doing it. He seemed like the ridiculous mole on the otherwise normal face for this movie.
He was the worst actor in it.
I know what you're saying, but I guess what I'm saying is that
he influences things. I think it's hard to have Stallone in your film and not have him have a huge hand in what happens.
Well, I mean, according to the Wikipedia, he stepped in and did a rewrite on it.
Yeah, on the script. Yeah,
on the script, which got him a WGA credit.
Yeah,
and let's face it, like we've seen plenty of Rennie Harlan movies, and they're very
they're very straightforward.
Yeah,
they,
yeah.
They kind of need someone to give you some like human connections, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm feeling this in Cutthroat Island that we just watched recently. Yeah. I didn't have none of this. Yeah.
I'm not saying that this movie has lots of human connections. It actually suffers from not having a side story about relationships at all. Like,
right.
But you can kind of tell that someone at least tried to give the dialogue a punch up.
And this is, you know, pretty recent after Rennie Harlan's Die Hard 2 stint, where he directed Die Hard 2, which was Die Hard in an airport. And so it makes kind of sense, even though he was resistant in the beginning, according to the trivia, to direct this because he felt like it was just another Die Hard movie, which it kind of is.
Yes, it is.
It's Die Hard on a Mountain. Although I take issue with the name a little bit. There was very little cliff hanging. There was lots of hanging and dangling, but there's no cliffs. Mm-hmm. It's all peaks.
Yeah, we get.
I don't know. I mean, you think of it in the terms of like not he's got his fingers at the top of the cliff and he's hanging off the side. But there's a whole bunch of time spent on that damn ladder hanging off the side of a cliff.
Oh, that's true.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, in the term in this relation, I think you're trying to say is it's like I was assuming it was pointing at the old serials that used to always end in a cliffhanger, but then they tried to make it clever by saying, you know, he's literally hanging off a cliff in the opening scenes.
Yeah.
It does start with that. And it you say, it starts with one of the most memorable and impactful little, sequences that you could ever kind of start a movie with. Almost sets itself up for failure. Like it's almost too much to start.
Right.
You know, because like, again, like I said, all their solution to everything is to climb precipices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, like, you know, when you see the craziest one to start, like, how could that get more, you know, how are you going to pump this up later? Mm-hmm. Like, I've already seen him. Like, I guess he saves the girl. That's how you're going to
find it. Right. Yeah. I found it fascinating how, and I, once again, I feel like this is, we've seen Rennie Harlan's movies before. I think that Stallone really made this push to go, okay, how can we resolve this within the hero's skill set? Because, you know, he's going against real military, you know, military people, you know, who are supposed to be highly trained at fighting, and he's supposed to just be a rock climber. He has no backstory of military training. There's nothing that says that he's done anything other than just enjoy nature and climbing. And so they try to stick to it.
I actually thought, you know, so that's a trope, right? Your good guy, your hero, only has really one skill, right? So the bad guys come along and beat him up. And I like it. I liked it a lot. I was like, wow, like, look at Sylvester Stallone. He looks like a cage fighter, and he's getting his ass handed to him by this skinny, tall guy in a cave. Uh-huh. But then it got subverted. The trope got turned out because he kills the guy with a stalactite. And it's like, no.
That was... I both cheered and booed because the critical watching, unlike my previous watchings, were just like, oh, let's have some fun. And I was like, oh, come on. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool still, though. I like it.
It's pretty cool. I mean, but you've got to...
Bench presses him right into us.
Yeah, but you have to go straight up, right? You can't go at any sort of angle.
Yeah.
Much easier just to break off the stalactite. I guess you want to preserve
that kind of strength. Just break them apart over your knee.
Every time you've been to one of those caves, I always say, now let's not disturb the natural growth of the thing.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. So instead,
you just break it off and stab them like it's an icicle in Die Hard 2.
Sure.
That cave was so ridiculous. If that was an actual cave in the real world that you could just walk into, it'd be a major tourist attraction.
Oh, it'd be huge. Mm-hmm. Maybe he discovered it. I don't know. You know, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
And also, I'm not certain about this, but I'm pretty sure that caves that have lots of formed stalactites and stalagmites are down, not up. It wouldn't be a cave high.
They're formed through water, you know, droplets dropping, right? That's how they slowly migrate.
For millions of years, or thousands. Yeah,
so something like that high would not be like that, maybe.
And you wouldn't have to climb up way high to get above the stalactites.
Right.
those would be at the top with all the bats.
Yeah, the movie had a lot of these little mystery locations.
If
you park your brain at the door, I will say I had a good time with Cliffhanger overall. Like, I had a fun, dumb time with it. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of times where I went, The stunts in this aren't too bad, or those miniatures look better than I thought they would, or whatever.
The stunts were freaking amazing.
They were
sometimes
pretty good. Yeah.
The highest paid stunt ever, $1 million in this movie.
Whoa.
For a guy to ride across a zip line so they get some real footage of him between the two peaks, I guess. Yeah. So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive. And there was just, I don't know, a couple of moments, like when they're doing the old rope run. Across the cliff face. That was rad looking. Him hanging up there upside down in the beginning was cool. All the ropes or all the girl fallen stuff had a legitimacy to it.
Right.
That all surprised me. I just thought, well, this is going to be, you know, green screen after green screen. And there was some of that.
We're really talking good about this movie, but we haven't even talked about Lithgow's performance.
Oh, my Lord.
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But really quickly before we leave the visual effects, this one, the film actually was nominated for Oscars, if you can believe that. But it was nominated for things like visual effects and cinematography and stuff like
sure.
that.
Yeah Sound. Which makes sense. I mean, it's a beautiful, it's a fantastic place to film. I mean, I mean, if you're going to film something, you know, snowy peaks, that's a great place to go, right?
Well, totally. Absolutely.
What's crazy is
sound, visual effects and sound effects. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sound effects were really good.
What's crazy about where the beginnings of this movie was supposed to be a comedy, Calico Pictures or Carol Co, however you say it, had originally signed Stallone to be opposite John Candy in a comedy about feuding neighbors, titled Bartholomew versus Neff. That's a shit name. Anyway,
and this actually wasn't what the movie originally was going to be. This is just how they got
this is how they got to him
into this role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. That was originally going to be a John Hughes film. I'm a little sad we never saw that come to fruition. I think that could have been all right.
Too.
And then there were other projects, a futuristic science fiction horror thing called Isobar.
It's
about a genetically created monster breaks free in a high speed runaway train thing. And then
and you're just going to walk past that like that's a totally normal movie to make.
I mean,
don't walk
it didn't
past
happen.
That.
Like, if it would have happened, that would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen that, but never happened. And then this movie also, I guess, Ridley Scott, Roland Emmerich were all going to direct, which is weird. They got to Rennie. Rennie Hartman's the poor man's everybody.
Keep going. You're about to get to the best part.
All right, here we go. They were, let's see, $90 million budget with Stallone and Kim Basinger playing the main roles. Due to disagreements between Carol Co and producer Joel Silver about the script changes and lack of artistic freedom, both Scott and Emmerich both gave up on the project, which in the end was canceled. So that's a bummer. Right.
But don't forget about the second project. That was the one you're about to talk about.
Yeah, this is the story. You know what? Just read Wikipedia.
All right, here you go. Here it is.
It is second, the most interesting Wikipedia on any movie we've watched with the background stuff.
All right, here's the second paragraph. The second project in which Stallone was involved with this deal was an action disaster thriller called Gale Force, described as Die Hard in a Hurricane, which Rennie Harlan was going to direct, which Stallone played an ex-Navy SEAL who has to fight against a group of modern pirates who attack a coastal town during a large catastrophic hurricane. The first version of the script for the film was written by Dave Chappie in 1984, who then wrote six more drafts between 87 and 89. it says, and after his final draft received some praise and following the bidding war between several studios in 1989, they bought, meaning the studio, bought his final draft for $500,000. The promise of an additional $200,000 if the movie was made. Harlan was paid $3 million for directing the film, but because his contract gave him full control over the project, he demanded many rewrites to the script. So, amongst other things, increase the number of action sequences, make them bigger, etc. Between 90 and 91, they were working on the project. Carol Co. spent over $4 million on the different script writers and versions of the script. One of the screenwriters who worked on it, Joe Esterhaus, was paid $500,000 to write his version. He wrote it, or rewrote it, as an erotic thriller, similar to his previous first screenplays.
So his version, I think, had a woman in the movie called Gale Force.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We spelled it instead of G-A-L-E. It was G-A-I-L.
It sounds like a movie about a Bond girl, so that's where he went.
Yeah.
And he brought back the Italian Stallion for his pornographic return.
Yeah.
I just want you to know out there, if you don't believe us, Scott has just given you the first 30% of this diatribe
about saga.
about what got us to the point where we're actually making the movie that we saw. It's just crazy. It's just unbelievable.
It's crazy. Yeah. And it made it, I guess, is considered profitable in the end. The movie made enough money to sort of make up for all of this ridiculous screen writing and, you know, millions of dollars spent before the thing was even greenlit, really. But, yeah, what a long, twisty road to get to your damn stupid diehard ripoff with, like, John Lithgow in the most ridiculous, over-the-top, dumb role he's ever been in. My gosh, dude.
Ooh, wow, that's a big call-out. I don't know. Hold on.
Think of another one, because I can't think of one. John Lithgow is a director or an actor who I have great respect for. He's won Oscars. Like, the dude is, you know, prolific, been around forever. I can't think of one where he was chewing the cheese more than this.
Not in what was supposed to be a semi-serious role,
okay,
right?
Yeah, okay. So Buckaroo Banzai wouldn't qualify
because it's intentional
cheese. Yeah, that's a good point. Trying to think of another one. I really can't. Like, he's been in some stuff, like, you know, Harry and Anderson.
He's only been more weird in Third Rock from the Sun. I mean, that's how close his character was to just insanity.
Where he's an actual alien, Yeah.
I mean, because was the accent necessary? No. Did I still have fun? Yes, I did.
I can't believe they made him British. There was no point in making him British.
None.
And it was like, oh, jolly good. All right. Well, we'll just have to chase him down the mountain, I guess. Good. Yes.
Such an odd choice. Like, I don't know who chose it. And there are parts of it, like when he shot that girl in the back, when he whispers, you know, the definition of true love, it's sacrifice, and then it blows her away. That was actually really effective and cool.
That was maniacal. Absolutely.
But I just could never really take him too seriously. But in the end, I'm just going to say, as dumb as it is or as over the top as it is, I don't want it any other way.
This is what Cliffhanger needs to be.
Yeah, for sure.
That woman, by the way, the British woman who we actually watch do that thing that we always talk about. I can't believe that person's British. They do such a great American accent. She does it right there in front of us.
Yeah.
We saw her just a few weeks ago as Robin Williams' wife in Hook.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, that's right. Right.
She has her hair pulled back. I didn't recognize her that way.
Hold on. Yeah. She's not the one. She's not. Goodall, I think. She's not Steve Martin's wife in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Is she?
I don't think so. No.
She was Emily Schindler in '93 as well. So that's interesting.
What, Schindler's wife?
She was in Disclosure, White Squall, The Princess Diaries, and The Best of Me.
Oh, I'm thinking of Susan. I'm thinking of Layla Robbins. Sorry, different lady.
Okay. They did have a similar look, though, yeah.
I love that you called Hook a few weeks ago. It was over a year ago.
The last year has just
been weird.
Shut up. Was it really over a year ago we watched Hook?
Yeah, it was the first. It was the first FilmSack film that we all did in quarantine in March 2020.
Wow. Oh, so it really has been over a year. Yeah. Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah, there it is. Saturday, March 21st, 2020.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I would have said maybe not a few weeks, but I certainly would have said like within the last 3 months that we watched. Yeah.
About 52 weeks is what you're looking for there.
Just about.
That's crazy.
I was curious about something in this movie with the dialogue. Speaking of Crystal, who is the jet pilot, she kept saying repeatedly over and over again. What was she saying? You said
tango, tango.
I was beginning to wonder if they were getting paid by the word, because some of the dialogue was just repeating the same things over and over again, like Gabe, tango. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. No, I don't know about it. I mean
are you pimping the word? Come on.
I don't know why they couldn't have got more creative with their like fake ex-military tango stuff. Because the whole point
of saying Gabe so much. Oh, like god. The two Mountain Dew twins his name about 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And Gabe. The dying woman, even her last word as she's falling is Gabe.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it would be no or shit.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Why is that? That's a weird thing. Never thought of that.
I have a theory on that, of course, that what we're seeing is actually from his point of view, and she didn't really say gay, but he has such guilt, and you know, he's the storyteller here in this case. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah,
I tried to explain it away, but yeah, Gabe is not right.
Did you see your Twin Peaks guy was a Twin Peaks guy was one of those Mountain Dew twins. What's his name? He played Hank. Well, it was in the newer series, not the old one.
Right.
You all know that guy. He was on Justified. Yeah. He was on Hawaii
Younger,
Five-0,
younger kid.
And thank you for this movie.
With the short hair.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks to this movie for nodding at us Gen Xers so we could, you know, so we could enjoy this movie during the time. It's like, I need somebody I can relate to.
Yeah.
Dude.
Am I the only one who thought of those two guys as Jonesy and Riley?
Nice. From Letterkenny? Nice.
I can see that.
No, you know what? You're not. But I couldn't put my finger on it until you just said it. It was bugging me. Right. Because in my head I was going, oh, this is like Bill and Ted, or this is like whatever. But I couldn't put my finger on it. But it really is Jonesy and Riley. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, which I just watched again because that show is great. This thing also has Michael Rooker, who, Yondu. So we got a little bit of a Galaxies, Guardians of the Galaxies reunion here. Sylvester Stallone and Michael Rooker there. So that's cool. Rooker's great in everything. So just
I actually was kind of taken aback with thought about Michael Rooker because I've just been rewatching all of the MCU stuff and I got to thinking, like, what else do I know him from? And maybe I just haven't really seen his movies over the years.
I wonder if the last one we saw
Walking Dead?
Yeah, he's watched Walking Dead at all?
No, I've never seen any.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, did you see part there? You watched it with us. The Replacement Killers. He was a good guy in that.
Okay, I do remember him in that movie. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
He was good in that. I actually saw his big breakout movie finally, the one about the serial killer, and it's old. It's like 80 or 79 or something like that. Let me see. Right. What's it called?
By the way. The brief moment I got
Henry,
to meet Rooker.
His second movie, his first movie was called Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. And he is freaking wicked in that. Like, if you want to see a movie that holds up, like, really holds up as a serial killer movie, Henry, Portrait of a Killer, hell of a thing. Oh, my gosh.
Anyway. Apparently, a couple of years before this, he was in the Film Sack nominee Days of Thunder. And I don't remember him being in it.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, because that was the one he was trading paint with, right?
Wait a minute, Days of Thunder.
With Tom Cruise, and he's a racer.
Film Sack 222.
And they're racing, down the halls of the hospital.
In their wheelchairs, right? Yes.
Oh, his name was Rowdy. Hold on,
Rowdy. Something. Of course, it was.
Rowdy Burns.
A NASCAR joke. Name.
Rowdy Burns. There you go. Yeah, I don't remember that. In fact, I'm having one of those moments. I mean, Brian was thinking Hook was a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember doing Days of Thunder at all.
He's been in a bunch of movies that I like. He was in Cliffhanger. This one, he was in Tombstone, and I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
He was in, I don't remember Rooker being in Tombstone.
Oh, was he one of the bad guys that prompted probably Kilmer to say? Yeah, go ahead.
Probably.
He also put Rowdy in that one, too.
Right. He was in Mallrats. I don't remember him in Mallrats.
No, I don't at all. Yeah, he's been around forever. He's in the new Suicide Squad thing. He plays, what's his name? Shoot. I forgot his name.
Savant.
That's it, Savant. Yeah, which is a really interesting pick for him. Interesting folks in this movie. I don't know if we've mentioned her, but Jeanine Turner, who we mostly knew from Northern Exposure at the time. One of the greatest shows of all time, and I still can't believe that thing's not streaming somewhere. It's gross. It's gross. It's all music rights stuff, it turns out. All of it's music rights. Nobody can get the right rights, so it's all effed up.
It's terrible, by the way, if you have specific music memories of something and you go watch it streaming and they've replaced the music. It's
the
terrible.
Worst. Mm-hmm. It's the worst. And it's just ruin it for everybody. You bunch of a-holes. I freaking hate it. Leon is awesome. He's got only one name, this Leon fella.
This Leon fella.
I have to admit, I've never really seen him before, but apparently he's known for some like karate business and martial arts.
Playing really musicians good. In other movies.
Oh, interesting. Oh, Little Richard. He wasn't Richard, but he was in that.
And the character's name
was Leon? No, he was Little Richard in the 2000 film Little Richard. And he was also JT Matthews in The Five Heartbeats. He was David Ruffin in The Temptations.
Oh, no way. The only thing I knew him from is Above the Rim.
What was his character's name? Here in this movie.
Oh, he played, hold on.
You said Leon, but was that?
Leon's his real name. He played Kinect, and he's the one that got killed on the stalagmite.
Wrong answer.
Yeah.
I see now. I couldn't place because he's only got one name. His name is Leon. Okay. I was lost.
Yeah.
Okay. I see now. I understand. I'm caught up.
He's awesome. We didn't mention him, but Ralph Waite, who played Frank, is a old school, like Walton's act. He was
John. He was John Walton Senior, baby. Yeah. And it killed me when they killed him. I died a little along with him.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
He's been around forever. Been in millions of things. The Bodyguard. The much underappreciated The Bodyguard with Kevin Costner.
And you're supposed to feel really, really bad when he dies, right? Like that's supposed to drive your feelings. Yeah. Nowadays, he would have turned out to be also like ex-military or something. Yeah. Nowadays, the old guy would have contributed to the fight back.
I love the fact that this movie did not go that route. It would be so easy. That's something they did so common during that time was to go, oh, by the way, I'm ex-military and I was in NAM, and okay.
I'm saying it's not though. It was a cheap out to make you feel something. I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think a lot of movies kill the old guy back in the 80s and 90s to do that, and nowadays they wouldn't. They would have freaking space cowboys.
Yeah, or they'd kill space a kid. Cowboys. Or they'll kill somebody. But the idea is to say, here's an innocent person, and now you've really done it.
And like, that was the opening of this film. Right. I mean, Rooker's girlfriend was, you know, she was that. She was innocent. She was scared. She was brave, but she didn't want to do it.
His fault for taking her up there, by the way. I'm blaming Rooker for the whole damn thing.
Oh, absolutely. It had to be planned. You mean, get up there with your knee blown. Oh, shut up. You're totally drunk.
Yeah, that's his fault. Like, as much as, you know, Stallone took it to heart and blamed himself and all this other stuff, the whole time I'm thinking, it's freaking Rooker, and he's sure laughing it up back at the office. Come on now.
All of these highly experienced rescue people are going to hook her up to some metal fatigued,
no backup.
No backup. Get
that whole. But man, that whole sequence of her equipment failing is the scariest thing.
I agree.
I agree.
They had to do a disclaimer somewhere. It was said in the trivia about
no girlfriends were killed in the making of this movie. Wasn't that?
They said something about like because the equipment they use is known for being really awesome and sturdy and the best of its kind, and they had to make. They had to put some, I don't know if it's in the credits, but somewhere they had to
basically
say,
this would never happen. We like this equipment.
Yeah. They basically said, look, we, you know, no shade on the manufacturer. We actually broke this to make it work. Yeah. And, that's a thing you don't think about, right? Like if you're going to make a movie where something fails, you don't think about the company who made it.
Right.
Going to get blown.
If it just slips through, like if it does fail, it's going to be like a catastrophic failure. It's like,
just like zip right out through every strap.
They do a great job of a paradox at the very beginning of the movie. The first thing you see establishes Stallone as the greatest free climber in the world. Yeah. Like he's doing things that you're just like, oh, that's not possible. That's incredible. He's a hero of a climber. And then the next thing that happens establishes him as kind of a loser. Like woman dies on his watch. And it's like if they'd only thought to just put her on his back, he could have just climbed down.
Right, yeah.
I wish they had shown us in between the time that he left for so long. I would like to see a training montage.
Oh, right. He's got a beard.
Yeah, he's got a beard, but he's also trying to improve his one arm that he lost her with. So he's like double buffing up on that because it's like, if I had just been a little stronger, if he's a little bit stronger, you know, got some hand weights. I'd like to see that.
Man, this was peak Stallone. Biceps.
He's looking ripped
for sure.
Oh my god,
those things were they're like two hams, dude. Just big old hams.
Yeah.
And during that sequence, Brian, we could keep cutting back to his estranged girlfriend. She's at home just brushing the horse. Just brushing the horse.
The horse has got a big old hole in it where she's brushing so much.
The fur all worn down on
all
one mange side.
Looking. Yeah.
I can't believe nobody's brought up the true hero of this story. And that person, played by Rex Lynn, is Travers. Now, Travers is the Treasury agent gone rogue, and he's making this all possible. Yeah. That guy ate everything up he chewed in this movie. Did. Every time anyone talked to him, he was like, shut the F up! Get the F over there! Like, that guy was so pissed all the time. He is the reason I recommend people watch this movie, because I think Travers is on fire, man.
Well, and he has to go head-to-head, like, emotionally, as an actor, he has to go head-to-head with Lithgow, which is really hard. Lithgow is so much to talk to.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Like, having that juxtaposition was really fun, but this is a dude, everyone knows him, you just don't know that you know him. He's in everything. He's most recently excellent in Better Call Saul. He's, I guess he's on that Young Sheldon show, although I haven't seen it. Right. He was in that Waco miniseries, which I really enjoyed back in 2018. Very good. All sorts of shit. Just, you've seen him and you know him.
Yeah.
And he's great and in this.
Apparently a Rennie Harland guy, because we saw him in Cutthroat Island.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And he's kind of hard to believe as a truly bad guy. You just can't help but to feel, but maybe he has some kind of redeeming quality about him. You know what I mean?
Well, you feel that he screwed up. This is 2 weeks in a row where we get a guy like this. Last week it was TJ, and this week it's this guy. Yeah. It's the same sort of thing. There's a career dedicated person underneath this that's just feels like maybe I'm at an end, or you're at a crossroads, or I've got to do something more, and maybe this will be easy. I can get all this money and get out of here and never have to worry about it again. But then you fail. But when then he goes after that rabbit and almost, there's trivia that this is great. There's trivia that the rabbit was supposed to be killed, and Stallone didn't like it. And also, I guess sneak preview audiences were upset that the rabbit was involved. So this, I don't know if this is true, so I'll just play this here.
Scrutiny.
It says Sylvester Stallone paid $100,000 of his own money to have that scene reshot so that the rabbit left.
I believe it feels kind of almost out of place, because it looks like somebody literally throws the bunny on top of this. It's like, get up there, go.
Right. Pushes exactly. Nudging with a hot poker or something, just out of frame.
Does that cost $100,000 to do that? I don't know. Realized this was 92, 93, but I could.
Stallone don't know how much that is. He's like, seriously, whatever. Cheeseburger, $100,000. Yeah, do that.
I need two other people and an iPhone, and I can go capture that footage.
Yeah,
and I can see why he did it, right? Because it would have made him look like a real asshole. For like, all right, I'm going to strap this homing device onto a bunny just so the bunny gets killed.
That's exactly what I thought.
Use him as a decoy.
He is willing to sacrifice anybody. I mean, usually it's like he didn't even tell his girlfriend to get off the mountain until he had, pretty much used her, and she was becoming a hazard to his success.
She was a problem.
He's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Pet the horse.
Well, that was the other thing. That's the other thing is he used the rabbit in that way. It worked to have him escape, though, because Travers is the perfect guy to have the escape happen to. Like, in other words, like, Travers is so on fire, pissed off, that he can't even kill the damn rabbit at this stage of the story. And that's pretty great. I enjoyed how that worked.
But I'd like you to also just spread the scrutiny to every depiction of an animal in this movie. Like, it's like we're at really high elevation. That's the only explanation for a lot of the geography. Mm-hmm. And there's a, like, 35 wolves just hanging around, coming and going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those wolves, they were going after the Pepsi twins or whatever you called them. What'd you call them? The Mountain Dew twins.
The Mountain Dew twins.
Yeah.
And they look like dogs to me. I don't know how much money they spent on those wolves, but it seemed like it wasn't enough.
Dogs with contact lenses.
The Courtney's Palm pay for them or not. No telling what it might be.
You can't tell. But anyway, there's a really fun kind of cadence to the movie that I just didn't expect. I don't know why I avoided it in 93. I didn't avoid it. I didn't even have kids or anything. I was just like, this is something I would have normally seen in theaters.
I remember when it came out thinking, oh, come on. But I was like, I kind of want to go see it. It was during that time, during 93, where this movie almost feels like it could have easily been in the late 80s. I mean, it felt like I was a few years behind. Because this is Jurassic Park year, right? So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, that's the year we always look at.
That about, didn't we say that about Cutthroat Island, too? Is Rennie Harland a man out of time?
A little.
I think he is.
Yeah.
I think he is.
I think a little bit, yeah. I mean, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay to be out of time sometimes.
My biggest problem with this movie is the poor lighting on the soundstage scenes. Because you had all these fantastic outside scenes.
Yeah, the outdoor stuff was nice. Looked good.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And then it hit a soundstage, and it just felt like it was very bland lighting. It just felt flat.
Give it to I don't know who you blame there, but yeah, I guess blame the writing.
Could that have been done on purpose just to make the outside scenes look more dramatic?
I was trying to figure that out, but it definitely felt like, it's like, I feel like I'm inside right now, but not in a cave. I feel like I'm inside a building.
Did we do Deep Blue Sea, by the way, the 99 movie he did? We did that, right? Where Samuel Jackson does the...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
we did that? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was just looking here at his movies. It was 2 years later, after Cliffhanger, 95, he releases Cutthroat Island. That movie's the first movie he was nominated for a Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Director.
Nice.
He would get four more of these. I'm sorry, three more of these. one for Driven, one for Exorcist the Beginning, and one for The Legend of Hercules in 2014. Nothing since.
I think by the time he got into Legends of Hercules, I think he was just leaning into what he was becoming. He's just like, okay, I've got plenty of raspberries. Let's just go in. Let's just go in.
I mean, look at this cool movie he's got coming out this year called The Misfits. I say cool because we don't know yet, but it's got set in the Middle East. Film follows master architect Richard Pace, played by Pierce Brosnan, who finds himself caught up in a major gold heist with implications that go far beyond what he could possibly plan for. And then there's the rest of your cast. Pierce Brosnan, Tim Roth, Jamie Chung, and then a bunch of people. Nick Cannon. Oh, boy. But my point is, like, you know, that sounds like a project like, oh, that could be fun. Tim Roth, Pierce Brosnan together at last. Like, cool combo. I don't know, man. Randy Harlan is a spotty director guy.
But I think he likes making movies. And so a lot of those things, even though I still enjoy them. I mean, they don't feel like none of the movies I've watched by him, they don't feel like they were labored. They just feel like they were at least fun.
Yeah. I don't know about Cutthroat Island was really a piece of shit, though.
Yeah. But it was still fun. Yeah,
I had a hard time.
But having him do stuff like come back and do stuff like this, right? Follow the template that you created in the 80s and 90s with stuff like this. Because if you were to have this movie done by a different director now, you wouldn't get the scene at the beginning. It would slowly be told to you over the course of, wow, why is
flashbacks.
Gabe Walker so timid about the mountain? And then you get these little fragments of like, builds up to the fact that he let this woman die. No, just give us the cheese at the very beginning and give us some more action movies.
Usually they say, usually the rule of thumb is an audience will forgive something bad in the beginning, but they won't forgive it at the end because it's the last thing to remember. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the only thing I really remember from Cliffhanger, because it's been a couple years since I watched it, was that beginning, that intro. I was in. I'm like, let me sit down. Let me do this.
Yeah. A lot of people thought he would be the heir apparent to somebody like, John McTiernan, who did the first Die Hard.
Right.
He has an interesting career. Like, okay, 87, he does Predator. 88, Die Hard. 90, Hunt for Red October. 92, right. Medicine Man. You ever lose your car keys? That's the one.
That was good. The Medicine Man.
And I always forget Last Action Hero was his, but they did another Die Hard and then a couple others. And then by the time we get to 03, he's done. He's out. Feels like that guy had a very specific set of films to make. He came to this planet and made them, and now he's just chilling.
We're gonna watch the rest of them. Like, we've now seen a string of five Rennie Harlan films that are all in a row. It's Ford Fairlane, Cliffhanger, Cutthroat Island, Long Kiss Goodnight, and Deep Blue Sea. I am going to make you guys watch Driven with me and then Mindhunters. We have to watch Mindhunters. Yeah. So we've got two more of these at least.
Yeah. There's something interesting going on that I really haven't focused on until this watching. And I thought about it a lot. Movies during this time, and I'm trying to see if it still exists. We often made the bad guys a little bit comical so that when we had to deliver those one-liners at the end, we didn't bring in a lot of drama. I mean, we just excused the fact that we just murdered somebody and we dispatched them in a very serious way, but it didn't detract from our action in good time. Because even though this movie has got a lot of really heavy, you know, subjects, I'm still having an actiony good time.
Yeah.
A thriller.
Yeah.
So that's you have to write characters so different to make that happen.
Yeah. No, I think they did all right. Like, yeah. Again, I think that Stallone is a bad actor in this movie. I'll say that without any hesitation. I think he's very poor acting.
Didn't believe he was cold?
I just think he was bad in this. Right. And I think Stallone can act. He does it so rarely. Like, when he does, it's amazing. And then when he doesn't, it's like, oh, geez, dude, you're really phoning this in. This was one of those. I don't think that what's-her-name was super special here, Janine Turner. She's fantastic in other things I've seen her in, including Northern Exposure. In this, she's just sort of brushing the horse.
That's a new term. Brushing the horse. That's a good trope.
She survived
the whole film, which I wasn't expecting.
That's true.
And by the way, we haven't talked about it. It's a bit long. It's got a long runtime for its purpose.
I never got bored, though. I was always into it.
Sure. I just noticed 45 minutes into the movie, I just looked at my watch and I'm like, oh, wow, I have over an hour to go. Wow, what's happening? But, you know, yeah, Jeanine Turner survives. She's the only surviving woman in the world.
Yeah, in the world.
And and she was good. Like, I cared about her. I wanted her to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't even say for sure if they're together again. They didn't play on that trope very much. The thing kind of ends weird because it just sort of ends
abruptly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For a movie that didn't have a problem taking its time getting there, the very end was just like, all right, we're done with that. Helicopter's coming in. Out.
It was like they ran out of film.
Yeah. They didn't. I think this is also maybe Rennie Harlan a little bit more. And I think this is one of the reasons why Stallone maybe didn't seem like he was really invested in the acting. I think he was too busy trying to save this film. I don't know this for a fact, but it really felt like he was really busy trying to salvage this film from the backside, trying to figure out, you know, like reshooting bunny scenes and that kind of stuff. And and making sure that the characters were doing things that were supposed to do. He really felt like he wasn't in front of the camera for me. And I think that might
I feel the same way, and it's hard to say, obviously, but based on all this crazy side information that we read, it does feel like he was maybe balancing a lot of stuff to make the movie, make sure it hit all its marks, which means he was distracted and not really acting all that much, or just kind of phoning that in. I did notice Zach Greenier was in this for like a hot minute. And I love him. If you don't know who that is, you've seen him in everything, but most prominently recently, based on an amazing recommendation that Ibbett made once on TMS, I watched that Dev show, which is a short kind of mini series thing on Hulu, I think it is. My gosh, that guy's so cool in that. He's so creepy good.
He really is. And he needs to maybe grow the mustache out a little bit wider in this one because it's borderline
porn time. Yeah.
No, I was thinking it's almost a little Nazi.
A little Nazi on his lip there.
Okay. A little bit of a Hitler going, sure.
A little short. Yeah. Maybe widen it out.
He wasn't in there very long, which is a bummer. Same with Don S. Davis, who was SG-1. Everyone knows him from that. He was barely in it.
We just saw him in Twister, like a year ago. We saw him in Twister. And
all our 2020 ones are just a week ago. That's how we see it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's also one of the good guys in Tommy Boy, a movie I've seen 1,000 times. Mm. So like I recognized him immediately. Like, oh, he's one of those guys. The guys that are like back at the plant rooting for Tommy.
He died too young.
Tommy Boy's almost become a bit of a cult classic almost. It's really I've seen it pop up a lot of places. I'm like, isn't this movie done? I love the movie.
Tommy Boy.
I have it on Laserdisc, but I'm like, I can't believe that it still makes the rounds.
Tommy Boy, dude. People love that movie. Who just died was in that? Dennehy was his dad in it. He just died.
Yes. So good.
Everyone's dead.
And Don Davis, another Twin Peaks connection right there.
I didn't know that.
He was Briggs, Major Briggs in the first two seasons. And they somehow, even though he died before this most recent continuation of the series, they used some old footage and stuff and kind of brought him back for it. So
they must have, because he died in 08 and that didn't come out till 2017 or something. That's crazy.
2017,
he was good in everything he did. That guy was awesome. Was. And if you still
you guys think about Rookerball? What'd you think about that?
Rookerball? What do you mean?
Yeah, like Rookerball when good old Hal Tucker was on the edge there and Craig Fairbass, Delmar was playing
soccer.
We're seeing the movie.
Right.
That's where you find your runtime. Like that scene was ridiculous. It didn't need to be in the movie. It completely took me out. I'm like, why are they pumping up this one guy just to throw him off?
Also, that was like, another one where he was getting paid based on how many times he said striker. Every time he said striker,
As soon as you see the two of them face to face, you're like, oh, Rooker's going to throw him off the mountain. There's no doubt in your mind.
Yeah.
Like,
Rooker's not a small man.
He just got a knife off of the dead body. Like, you saw that. You know he's going to win this fight. And so then, like, when it goes on and on and on with the soccer, just like, come on, movie.
Yeah. This guy, that actor, Craig Fairbass, Brass, rather, he's mostly in video games now, just almost entirely.
Yeah.
Star and Citizen. Holy cow, like, compared to how he looked in Cliffhanger, dude bulked up.
Oh,
like,
yeah, he's a beast.
He's a pretty big feller.
He's a beast.
He was wily back in Cliffhanger. But
can we all go look at his IMDb photo? Because it looks like it's out of This Person Does Not Exist.
It also looks like he's going to kill
IMDb
us.
Photo, it looks like it's computer generated.
That looks like one of those shots
from one of his video games.
No, I don't know what that is, but what it looks like to me is if you took that photo and put it through the Heritage app or whatever and made him move again like they're doing with all those old dead people, that would be the creepiest ass thing you could have on your Harry Potter painting wall. He's a scary dude. I don't know. In the movie, he was just like over the top lame. And he is British, by the way, but the accent he decided to emphasize sounded fake. Like, I was quite a striker in my youth.
I wonder if he was making fun of Lithgow. This is how Lithgow thinks we talk.
Look, I'm doing Lithgow.
And also is real vague about what secret or what top intelligence agencies these guys all worked for before they left. They say that in the trivia.
Right.
I assume it was
I don't know if they said it in the trivia or not, but yeah, they were kind of vague about that. But that was fine. I liked that my bad guys turned. But there's like this motley crew. I'm like, they would never hang out together. These are not the people that would hang out together. They didn't seem to have any common thread.
Nope.
Between so it was so odd.
It was an odd.
They found each other on Backpage.
Yeah,
they didn't like. This is really their first job together.
Mountain.craigslist.com.
Yeah. That's a tricky thing to pull off, though. Think about it. Die Hard has the same thing, but it works. Like, we don't know where any of those people, other than the twin brother German guys, there's a little bit of family there. But otherwise, everybody who comes to Nakatomi Plaza as a terrorist, they don't have any kind of good cohesion in terms of backstory or understanding why they're all in there. But it works somehow. I think this was just an attempt to do that, and it just didn't work as well. It was just like...
Okay. Right. Scott, how'd you feel about this movie having a little miniature Air Force One sequence?
I love that, dude.
Get off my plane.
Dude, freaking miniatures there's not enough of those anymore. Movies don't use them anymore. It's all CG these days. I love miniature work. And even when it's bad or noticeable, I get super into it because all I think about is somebody's job was to go make these rad mountain scenes and put up these realistic looking ass trees and have a plane come and crash into it. And it's all about, you know, it's not tiny. They're like, you know, the size of a dog.
And they have to adjust the speed of the film.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I like about miniature work is you just do what's necessary. And so it looks... Whenever I see CG stuff, it's always like, oh, yeah, we could have the plane go down, but we also need to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. I'm like, oh, but you're distracting away from the point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you've made it into a spectacle. Mm-hmm. I don't need a spectacle. I need information, and I need to move on. And sometimes and I think CG is
you can
still
do it. You can do it with CG. It's tempting to go too far. Yeah, I agree.
It's too easy to add that filter. It's like, oh, let me add this filter. Oh, look at that. And then we can zoom in from this side. And it's like, okay, back off from the filters, dude. Well,
and this movie is a lot of people dangling. People dangling is like the whole movie. It could have been called People Dangling.
And people dangler.
So often the way you do that is you film them in a perfectly normal angle for them to be safe, but then you tilt the whole frame, right? So Stallone is actually laying on a rocky floor, but you turn it until it looks like he's clinging to the side of a precipice. And it just caused me to really smile over and over when there's a guy dangling out the rear of a plane on a cable. And it's like, because it looked so much like they actually took a plane. I know they didn't take a plane up. Yeah. I know they just did it with a crane and a little frame around the camera, but man, it looks so real.
Yeah. The helicopter hovering in front of him while they're negotiating and whether he's going to throw the cash in the door or not. And all that looked great. That stuff looked good. Yeah. Never once in my head go, that's normal. I know it isn't, right? I know you can't do that and not have so much freaking wind blow down on Stallone. He'd be off that mountain in 5 seconds. But it was done in such a way that I didn't, you know, cringe.
Right.
I also knew it was kind of dumb and over the top, but it still freaking worked. I don't know. They did a good job.
Were they even all in the same mountain region? Because the weather was like... I've never seen the weather change as much in 5 minutes as I have in this film. Well, I mean, it's just
let
like,
me tell you something. This is the other place. Part that got totally wrong. Up that high, and I know they're not Everest high. Okay, I get it. I live behind these Rocky Mountains. I've been up there. It's really high, though, and there's no way Stallone survives that long in t-shirt
with
mode.
A shirt.
Yeah,
just a t-shirt.
Sweating, t-shirt mode. What
sweating
the hell?
In a t-shirt that would freeze instantly.
No, he'd be done. Like, there's the one part where he's super cold and he finds the girlfriend and he sort of pretends like he's cold. But I am telling you, like, even just when he's up to rescuing Rooker's girlfriend, they're all up there like it's Sunday afternoon in the summer.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Nobody's breath is being, you know, smoked out. It's just like regular breath. Yeah.
Right.
Like,
no, it's the sun can be hot. It's weird.
And that's all before he falls in the frozen over lake. Gets out. And
is, yeah, dude.
What was that?
I laughed so hard when he went under the water and his face passes by, like goes float by. I laughed so
I've
hard.
I've made
at
mistakes.
That. I laughed so hard. I couldn't stop laughing.
But he has a superpower, which is apparently Sylvester Stallone dries off instantly when he's wet.
Yeah. He's like a video game character before we started adding that in there.
Wicking. He's got
wicking technology. Yeah. Gabe Wick.
Yeah. And that whole part, Gabe. That whole thing with him and Travers, and then Travers does the same thing where he's floating dead under the surface.
Yeah.
I was laughing so hard.
Oh, now you're underneath. There was a lot of turns like that. Like we mentioned, I think me and Randy both mentioned the human sled. That was the funniest thing I've ever seen in a film, I think.
It was so good.
Pushing his face into the snow as he's
snow rash.
Riding him.
So stupid.
Like, oh my God. It was so fantastic. Stupid.
That guy should have also yelled his name as he fell.
Gabe.
You got me, Gabe.
Well, I really did want to know more backstory. Was that a museum that they were stopping in? Was it a gift store that it was?
She called it
no
a
longer?
Gift shop, but yeah, I mean,
so
it's,
too.
Who's getting stuff in that gift shop? I mean, but there's obviously power bars in there.
Yeah, 60-year-old rope. They mentioned that where they had got the rope. I'm like, well, was it the 30s when it was there during the cliffhangers? It's like,
I feel like this movie,
like you said,
I think if you're a coastal viewer of this movie, you're like somebody living in New York or whatever, and you see this and you've never been near snow or a mountain, you just buy it. You're like, oh, of course they'd have, all sorts of trail markers and some of them would have gift shops. No, none of this exists up there. None of it.
And what's most important to me is that a human cannot move around in a mountain range very much.
You're not at that speed.
You're going to basically, like, over the course of 10 hours on a mountain, you're going to stay on the same face between two peaks. You know what I mean? Like, how could you cover a lot of territory? And this movie makes it just seem like you're just like, oh, I'm just gonna climb from this one to that one and then like
right over the hogback.
It's
wild.
That stuff is super unrealistic, but once you accept that, there's fun to be had.
It does live up to his name. Cliffhanger does not live up to his poster, because if I was working at Blockbuster when this movie came out, I would have probably gotten sick of people asking me, you got that new Stallone movie, Hang On? Because they used, the poster has Hang On in huge fonts, and then Stallone Cliffhanger.
And
people would call that wrong every time.
Yeah, it's like Live, Die, Repeat instead of Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise thing.
Oh, guys, no, there's the poster. I remember the poster from Blockbuster. Mm. I was in high school when this came out, and I went and saw the movie, and then I couldn't wait to, you know, to see it get at home. And the poster has a big blow up of Stallone with like the sky behind him, and then a miniature version of him holding on to the woman who dies at the beginning. Mm. And like that's the poster. I don't know what this.
I remember I remember the cover box that looks like the poster, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess it was another poster. I guess they had a couple of them. So yeah, there must have been a couple. That one with the Hang On, though, that one's not good.
I want to start doing this more often where, you know, it depends on how old the movie is. Like, we're about to do, what's the movie we're going to watch when it comes out new? I forgot already.
Army of the Dead.
Army of the Dead, yeah. And we should maybe think about Mortal Kombat, which is like in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Cliffhangers
trailer. I just want to hear, let's just see what the tone of the 1993 trailer is.
Does it have narration? That's a good question.
Oh, and I hope there's blur in here. You know, there's always blur. That woo-hoo, there's always that, but let's find out. Here we go. I'm going to play a little bit. TriStar, it says. Okay, but no sound yet. Why is there no sound? This is fantastic.
In a world
That's weird. It has no audio on the...
Ruled by mountains.
Oh, it starts off slow. The trailer?
No, it's just no audio, but IMDb has
maybe,
no audio.
Oh, maybe it's a saving grace. Maybe they had a copyright hit.
Dang. Okay, well, never mind. Yeah, maybe we did get... Okay, well, you know what I'm going to do, though? I'm going to start thinking of that more so we can just kind of hear. I like how the tone... I like how tone shifts in trailers over years, over decades.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that's interesting, and I don't even know why, so... That's the thing we'll do. Look forward to it.
I just wanted to say one more thing about Army of the Dead. My gosh, like I have never felt as strongly about we should watch this for Film Sack when it comes out. Right. It comes out on May 21st, and I think we should sack it on May 22nd.
Yeah.
I've never felt so strongly about something, and it's entirely because like every shot of Dave Bautista and Tig Notaro in the trailer is just like, that's my jam.
Yeah.
Every single shot of them.
Oh, yeah. We're gonna, man. We're doing it.
It'll have to be the week after because I'm actually going to be in Vegas fighting zombies.
Oh, that's right. We have to wait for you to come home, which we should do.
Just 1 week.
Yeah. We're not going to do it without you. There's no way. All right. I found an actual one with audio here. Check it out. Here we go. Oh, there's a hand slipping. Oh, they're giving away the beginning. Oh, geez, the girl's falling now. Oh, there's music. It's super intense.
Wow.
Yeah, let's just skip ahead. Okay, it appears.
It really makes it into something that it really isn't.
Yep, yeah. It's all just classical, intense music with scenes from the movie. Well done, guys.
This is gonna be the movie event of the summer.
There was no in a world or any of that.
Yeah,
strap your popcorn bag on.
Gabe was a guy who liked to climb mountains.
There you go. Now that was every VHS movie that had a low budget.
Right. Yeah.
You guys remember that? It's a long time now. Probably more than I think it is. Maybe 20 years. But somebody when they recut The Shining.
Yeah. Is that Peter Gabriel song?
Yes.
So there are actually, I looked this up, there are actually three trailers for Cliffhanger that are all, they're basically all just different cuts of the same stuff.
Yeah.
But they use three different songs, and they're all the same crazy music. One is Ride of the Valkyries by Wagner.
That was that.
One is Requiem by Mozart. Great. And the third is O Fortuna, Carmina Burana.
They were going for epic is what they were going for.
Exactly.
I always connect that O Fortuna with a Guinness commercial from like early 2000s, maybe late 90s, but it was all black and white and they used that music. It was like, oh, what a cool commercial.
Most importantly, you probably don't have to pay much for that music.
No, probably. I think it's free. I think.
Yeah, Stallone's like, I'll pay for the bunny, but I'm not paying for that.
Well, okay, I shouldn't say it's free. If you have to get it, if you want a modern incarnation of it.
The performances are not free. The source music is.
Right. Yeah, so you want the London Philharmonic's version, you're going to pay for that. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Sylvester Stallone's got $100,000 laying around. It's not a problem.
There's probably a guy on YouTube will record it for you for free.
Hey, Brian, you live in the Denver area. Let me ask you this. They referred to the Denver Mint, which in the feature or in the film, this is where they got all the money. And they only produce coins, though. So if they had really had $100 million from the Denver Mint, it would have weighed 2,500 tons.
Yeah, it's crazy. And here's something Tina told me about the Denver Mint, because she's had to go there back when she was doing investigations. She'd have to go there. You are not allowed to bring money into the Denver Mint. You have to empty your pockets of money or leave it in the car or something.
That's not a problem. I never have money.
Do that. You should go tour it and just to say what it's like. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I did as a kid. I did. They had tours our class went there at least a couple times. And
can we have money?
You just made me realize. I mean, there's so many tropes in this movie. Like there's a trope called money to burn, which I love.
Literally,
whenever the script calls for somebody to burn some money, and it's usually stolen money, right?
Yeah, most always.
But how cool would it have been if the final shot had actually been of Stallone? He's chilling back at his girlfriend's house. Maybe they're back together, maybe not, you don't know. But he like reaches into his boot and pulls out a couple $1,000 bills.
That's exactly what we should
They really hounded on that.
Are you hungry?
They hounded so hard on the idea that money was so traceable and trackable that nobody could use it anywhere, yet they never really resolved that. Like I still don't really understand the bad guy's motivations.
Yeah. Because John Lithgow had the ability to move it, was the idea.
And by the way, international banks had electronic banking.
Are you hungry?
1993.
Sorry.
Right. Right.
If they really wanted to you know, need international banks to transfer cash, yeah, they should have set the movie in like the '50s or something.
those cases were continuity nightmares with the money. Yeah. They were just all over the place with how those things were working.
Yep.
And how they looked. It was weird.
Pretty fun watching that heist go down from the plane's perspective, yeah, though. That was pretty.
Oh yeah. That was pretty cool. The zip line for the money, mm-hmm, you know, to transfer from one plane to the other. That was all interesting. Oh, I'll tell you who I love though. Oh my gosh. The agent who was investigating and suspected.
Oh yeah. He's great.
That Travers was bad. Mm-hmm. That guy was cool. I want him to have his own movie, man. He was a chaos maker and he was skilled. He didn't just take it like a chump. He was actually making some really good moves.
That was Ryan. No. Hold on. Was it Ryan?
Was it Ryan? That sounds like it would be Ryan.
Yeah, it's Gregory like Scott Agent Cummings Ryan is the actor. He had a real smoldery, cool-looking mm-hmm deal going
yeah,
on there.
Yeah, the character was well-written.
Oh, no, here it is. Sorry. Agent Matheson, played by Vito Ruggins.
Vito Ruggins.
Ruggins.
Hello.
Ruggins.
Oh, Ruggins, get in here.
Anyway, so there's your Denver Mint, and that's a bummer because that's continuity. That ruined your continuity pretty hard.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But nobody, who knew that? I didn't know that. I would never
right,
know that.
No.
Even you live there and you wouldn't have known that. Right?
Even I live here and I didn't know or forgotten it or something. Was there a gross scout out the most?
I didn't guess. Write one down because I don't have anything, but you tell me what you think it should have been.
My guess would have been sticking your hand right there in a big pile of bat guano.
Oh, that's
not bad. Oh, yeah.
It's pretty bad.
You had to pick it up gross and smear it around like,
yeah,
Luke's
right. Right. What do you do? Like, you don't have a towel. You're climbing. Right. All you can do is wipe your hands on your pants or your shirt or something.
2 weeks in a row now, we've had magic bats because they live in places that would normally never be there. Last right week, we had them in the sewers or something? Wherever they were in SWAT. Right. I don't remember. SWAT, sewers, yeah, right?
I was waiting for Stallone to turn into Batman, but that never happened. So
there were a lot of them, though. It was like,
yeah,
I expected the
music. You know, and if realistically, if I'm in the middle of a battle with, you know, John Lithgow or something, and there's a cave full of bats, I mean, I freak out because if there was a whole bunch of bats, I'd be like, oh, get them out of my hair. But, you know, that's because most days that would be the most traumatic event that would have happened that day, you know. But on this day,
yeah,
I'm like, yeah, whatever, just cover your head. They'll be gone in a minute. Exactly. It's not even really a deal.
It's not. It's not a big deal. And I kind of struggle with that, but also bats don't live in the Rocky Mountains. But
yeah, way up in the Rocky Mountains like that.
They're little mammals. They prefer warm areas. I'm actually reading to you from Life Science. They can be found in rainforests, farmland, woods, cities. Like they're not found
in mountains.
Deserts, right, you know, places that are not the mountains in the middle of winter. I'm sorry.
Right.
They just don't exist there. So, and where were they going to go? Fly outside and die immediately?
Yeah, no. It's cold. Back in. Yeah. Back in.
Get back in. Yeah, that bat stuff was stupid. But overall, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I had a good time. Oh, it was, I don't know, a movie I think not only perfect for our show. This is a rare quality for a film to be perfect for our show. Ridiculous and ridicule, you know, ready. But also a really good time, and if I would have spent money on this in the theater and not felt bad about it. Mm-hmm. It was good.
Absolutely. If I had a couple of $1,000 bills laying around, I would totally went to see this at the theater.
Why not? Because it's just, you know, it's dumb, but it's good dumb. It's a real good dumb. Yeah. I'm a little bummed there wasn't that sequel. Apparently there was a sequel in the works. It was going to come out in 1994. Same producer, same everybody. It was going to be called The Dam. And it was described as Die Hard on a Dam, and would have Sylvester Stallone's character from this movie, so Gabe, there fighting terrorists who took over the Hoover Dam. But
believe
it never got.
I would have watched that.
Oh, hell yeah.
I would have totally.
Oh, for sure.
There. And apparently Stallone was into it. He tried to resurrect it in 2008, and it's just never happened. You couldn't get it.
I like to think of Daylight as the spiritual successor to this.
Daylight, remind me. Daylight.
Isn't that? It wasn't
Stallone
that the name
in
of the
a
movie.
Tunnel.
Stuck Stallone in a tunnel. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a tunnel between New York and New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's 1996 film.
I love it that everyone says it's Die Hard on a dam, and you guys, the way you guys describe it, it's Stallone in a
it's cliffhanger. It's cliffhanger in a tube.
Yeah, right. Tube hanger.
I've never seen Daylight. Is that a thing we should see?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you should totally see it.
See it for Film Sack.
How did I miss all these Stallone movies? I don't know what's wrong with me. Let's see. Oh, yeah, there it is. Disaster in New York Tunnel, explosions, blah, blah, blah. The year was 1996, so just after this, couple years. And Amy Brenneman's in that. Viggo Mortensen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dan Hedaya. Sweet, dude. I'm in. Sign me up. Anything Nick Tortelli's in, you got my money.
Yes.
You got my money. Hey, you guys, everybody needs help, and they need better help. If I could talk, better help. Hey, what interferes with your happiness? Or, you know, prevents you from achieving your goals? Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with licensed professional therapists. How's that sound? Need a little help in your life today? You connect in a safe and private environment, so it's all very convenient, and you can start communicating in 48 hours. That's nothing. All without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room trying to find a magazine. You don't have to do that here. BetterHelp has committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and super simple and free to change counselors if needed. BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. BetterHelp is convenient, professional, and affordable, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions and send a message to your counselor anytime you wanna. Depression, stress, anxiety, trauma, sleeping disorders, self-esteem, gender identity, family conflicts, all that stuff. It's all stuff that they work with you on. So many people are using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states right now. So here's what I want you to do. Start living a healthier, happier life right now. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/filmsack. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/filmsack for 10% off your first month. Thanks, BetterHelp. Go get some help. Let's get to some clips of this film. These are audio selections from the movie. Yeah, capture these myself, and let's just enjoy them. Here's the thing at the beginning about lying.
Baby, he lies.
Baby, he lies. All right.
Baby, he lies.
He lies.
I'm totally not doing her.
I did not hit her. Oh, hey, Mark. All right. Here's Gabe. I don't know what this is.
Gabe, shit, no.
Oh, it's Rooker going, Gabe, shit, no.
Yeah. Gabe, shit, no.
There you go.
Definitely perfect. A name count on this for Gabe's.
Gabe, shit, no.
Gabe's.
Yeah, Gabe's.
Yeah, number Gabe's.
What's happening now? It sounds like a sitcom. Anyway, here it is.
You thought of everything, didn't you? Everything except what's happening now.
Everything but what's happening now.
Now.
There's another one.
We just got an emergency call at 5 climbers.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand
lady.
What she's saying here. So
yeah,
she just
slow down.
This is a dialogue dump like no other.
We just got an emergency call at 5 climbers just ran off Combe Left. The weather's pouring in and Hal's gone up alone.
What?
The movie's
got up alone.
The movie's 2 hours long and she just fixed in like a whole scene worth of information in 2 seconds.
She really winged that one in there, and like nobody told her to take it again. And I just think that's crazy. All right.
Yeah, good enough.
What happens when you, let's see, I'm trying to think of a good joke here. What happens when you get older?
You just lose the feel.
You just lose the feel.
You just lose the feel.
You mean the nerve?
It's something about him saying feel is weirding me out. Hold on. Wait.
You just lose the feel.
Oh, I don't know what it is. It's weird.
Feel.
All right. Do you know how, or something about bad times?
What the hell do you know about bad times, man?
Oh my gosh.
Bad times.
You always had to end your sentence with man during the 90s. Man.
Yeah, man. Culture. You know how it works. All right. This is interesting. What do you say when you watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Here's what you say.
We got two heroes.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, right? There's two heroes in Falcon and
we
the
only
Soldier.
Need one.
Yeah. Here's some Travers business.
Right, Travers?
Get off my back, Quaylen.
Off.
I haven't even got on it yet.
All right, now.
I hope that whole set was improv'd. That would just be...
It felt pretty good.
That would make me happy.
It felt pretty good. And I love Travers getting pissed at anything. But there was this thing that John Lithgow made, a sound he made in the middle of that I'd like to play again and isolate it so you guys can hear it. And then you tell me what the frick is going on here. So here you go. Maybe this is what grossed me out the most. I don't know. But here it is.
Off.
Okay. Those two things at the beginning of the front are like him sniffing. So let me play it again.
Off.
Right. I don't know what he's doing. Like, it's just weird. I love weird shit like that. All right. Weird, not quite the Wilhelm, but close.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that. Wow. A little truncated, but still.
The guy shooting up at the avalanche.
Yep.
Yeah.
That guy.
Jeez.
Well done. Shooting grenades at a snow hole.
Yeah. These guys they don't know anything about avalanche. They don't have to be for 1 minute, these bad guys are like mountain climbers themselves. They got the equipment. They're rappelling down stuff. Next minute, it's like they don't know what avalanches are. I'm like, stop it.
Yeah, that's true.
Bad, bad guys.
Whoa, Randy, where'd you get that alternate poster? Crazy. Sorry, I just noticed it. You put it in the chat.
We were talking earlier about the poster that says hang on, and that wasn't the original. And I wanted to demonstrate what the original looks like. But.
Interesting. Well, he's no Drew Struzan, but it's okay. all right,
The tagline on this original poster is "The Height of Adventure."
Whoa!
And I'm sorry, but that tagline, you need to have that with an actor who's not kind of short.
I agree. Right. I agree. You never know. You don't think about it with Stallone, but he's a little guy, little tiny guy. Not really. I mean, he's a bulky guy, but he's a little guy. All right. When you tell Sly to sound cold, this is what he'll do.
But they're using Hal to find him. When they do, he's dead. Jesse, you gotta get on the radio and call Frank and tell him to call the state police.
There you go.
See what I mean about the acting, though? He is shit. That's really bad. All right, how about some cartoony punch sound? All right, that's good. Like that. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, that was something that was common during the time. We were really focused in like Twister and all these other films. The sound design stuff, they were trying to shift the libraries from the stuff we had heard all through the 80s, and it was all a lot punchier. It was a lot more.
But that particular sound is like
that wasn't good.
Marx Brothers. Totally. Or
right.
Slapping a side of beef.
Yep. And not only that, he's doing it while he's riding the man sled, by the way.
The man sled is so fantastic.
That's while he's riding that guy. He puns him. All right, here's a great fall. That's that man sled fell. Here's his hound. That's pretty good.
It must be a long way down. We're still screaming.
at the risk of gilding the lily, we all know that there's only so many places on the top of a man to hold on to. I'm just saying, as soon as you see that, you're like, okay, where are the grips? What's he holding on to?
Yeah,
like,
you got to have grips.
I want to know who was tossing. Yeah, I want to know who was tossing the snow beside the body, because they weren't really moving. They were like up above a little bit and in the background, speeding by. But somebody was tossing snow and stuff. It was weird.
Stallone's kids.
Stallone's kids.
Get him involved.
Hey, Daddy, am I doing it right?
Am I doing this right? That's his daughter, too.
Hey, Dad.
All right. Here's the what the F are you? Oh, this is Travers. I love him.
What the f*** are you talking about?
No, that's Leon. Sorry, that's, other guy.
Leon,
what the f*** are you talking about?
What you talking about?
All right, this is where you choose him out.
Not even a dumb mountain boy like you would burn $30 million.
Man, he is jive talking. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love it.
Dumb mountain boy.
All right. Unearthed, you guys. Just got this audio in. It came in the form of one of those little mini cassettes, which I haven't seen in years. And it doesn't have a return address, but it does say, it spells Ibbet funny, but I'm pretty sure this is Ibbet's mom. And she sent this super secret, top secret. This is apparently Brian Ibbet when he was in the bathroom at prom. And then your girlfriend was trying to see if you were okay because you were in there a long time.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
This is what you said.
If you want me, I'm in here.
Yeah. It also sounded like you were peeing.
Yeah, it was not very good either.
His whole plan involved getting Leon, the highly trained murderer, to come down there and then have his girlfriend hit him over the back of the head. Was that the whole plan? Because that was
well, he didn't know
that's
he
not
was
a plan.
Karate.
That's what happens when the plan fails.
He that didn't was, know he was Kung Fu guy till he got down there, though. You know what I'm saying?
I suspected. Yeah,
yeah, I did too. I didn't expect him to go full Kung Fu though and go yeah with every punch he did. But
he did. Yeah, I loved it though. He did. Yeah,
he got paid per yeah. Is my understanding.
Yeah.
Because this is where he says this is pretty good.
No bullets, bitch.
Yeah. What made that better?
And why?
What made that better is he's spitting blood as he said it. He had like fake blood and it was going everywhere. And he's like,
no bullets, bitch.
Spraying that all over the place.
Yep. Well, maybe if you hadn't shot them all at the avalanche, you would have.
Right?
Have some bullets left, you moron.
That's what I'm saying. All right. Here's get back and get back. Oh, you guys all enjoy this. Check this out.
Get back. Get back.
Get back to where you
Well done.
I couldn't help it. You know why? Because he timed it perfectly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
between his two.
Get back! Get back!
It's perfect. It just rolls right into the third one. I couldn't help it. All right.
All C4 timers had 5 minutes on this.
That's right.
For some reason.
On this, I wrote, this guy's the best. Here is our final clip.
What the f*** is going on?
Oh, I love Travers, man. Travers for the win.
Travers is great.
He's the best.
But I hate it. The only thing I hated about Travers was not the actor. It was the character, and his only reason for existing apparently is because he could mathematically understand that code to unlock that piece of device.
All right. Yeah.
Because it was random, but somehow he knew it. It changed every 15 minutes or something like that. I'm like, are you like doing math in your head?
That was pretty scary. I mean,
And again, like nowadays, you're like, oh, I just pull out my iPhone and I have my authenticator going through codes every few seconds.
Right.
What's the deal in 1992? Yeah. I don't know.
You had to do math. It's the only way I could figure it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you have any code that has 50,000 combinations? Should be like 100,000 combinations, right? Because it's
weird.
If you have a 3-digit number, there are 100 or there are 1,000 combinations it could be.
Yeah.
If you have a 4-digit number, 10,000 combinations.
That's exponential.
So I see you had the math problem too. I see the math problem too.
No, Brian, it's right. It's like there's an exponential jump every time you add a digit. Mm-hmm. And
But maybe he didn't think Lithgow was smart enough to understand any of that.
Well, the thing is, Travers, I mean, the only reason you have Travers there, well, two reasons. One, he's your inside guy now at the high up thing. He's got the most access to the treasury transfers and all of that. So you get him for that reason. And then I guess for this code reason. And then, other than that, you don't need him. I did think they kept, so the whole idea of keeping Rooker alive was they thought that Stallone was dead. Right. So there's our guide. We got to keep one of them alive. So, all right. So they keep him alive. But when they find out Stallone is dead, I don't understand why they kept Rooker around, because every time anything would happen, Rooker would like pull away and go, "You guys have a ball, hurry up!" And then they'd let him live again.
They just keep
letting him live. Right. Like, what are you doing?
He knew the pathing to get to the different areas of the mountains.
I guess apparently. So. I don't know. It seemed like they rookered him.
They rookered that up pretty good.
Yeah, they rookered it up.
And I was very disappointed that Leon never got to use his brass knuckles. They showed it right there in the the scenes.
Oh, chick in the bucket, you might say.
Like, grab a bucket.
That sounds like a chick in the bucket. The brass knuckles that Leon never used.
Yeah.
Good job.
Those things out.
No, that's totally what we were looking for. All right, check this out, you guys. It's time for the checklist. Frozen bat cave that does not look like a vagina. Check. Sylvester Stallone really needs more winter wear. Check. And finally, some of the best non-horror movie deaths in FilmSack history. I think I believe that. There were some pretty good deaths in this, I thought.
Yeah, and apparently some cut. Like, it was going to be NC-17 if they didn't tone down some of the gore on the deaths.
Oh, I want to see that. I like good deaths in my movies.
Yeah.
There's also some good fake blood work when he striker-faced Rooker in the face and they slow-moed that blood flying out of his mouth and hitting the snow.
Oh, yeah.
That was a pretty good shot.
I mean, blood and snow, that's a dynamic.
A lot of the deaths in this movie are the same trope over and over, the trope of you have outlived your usefulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm all for it. I love that trope. I love how because bad guys, like, they don't need all these bad guys. They want all the money to themselves, so they just keep killing their friends.
They just outlive their usefulness so quickly, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
It was so quick. It's like, how long have you been working with the girl? And she thought you cared about her or whatever, and then you're just going to offer? I don't know. That kind of stuff is... It just seems like you'd have to have a stronger relationship with these fellow criminals for them to do anything for you. I've never understood anyone does anything for anybody like that if they're just going to kill you. Like, why would you go? Why would you risk it? I don't know.
That's right.
All right. Let's get to the connections. The Star Trek connections are pretty strong in this one. I mean, I have to assume Paul Winfield, you're number one with the When the Walls Fell and the Star Trek II and all that.
Too many to even count. I stopped looking once I got to a bunch. But let's go in a different order. So first is Jeff McCarthy. He played the disposable pilot here. Mm-hmm. In Voyager, in the episode Caretaker, his character was named Human Doctor. Oh. And he was also in TNG. He was Roga Dinar in the episode The Hunted. You brought up Vito Ruginas earlier, who played Agent Matheson. In The Next Generation, he was Chief Engineer Logan in The Arsenal of Freedom.
Arsenal of Freedom.
You're absolutely right. Paul Winfield is our guy. He was Walter Wright in this movie. He was the other black man in Cliffhanger. And so, again, this is not Leon. This was he was Captain Dathon in the TNG episode Darmok.
Yeah.
But get this, he also had a bit part in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
I wouldn't call it a bit part. He was a captain, Chekhov's captain. He's the one that turned the phaser on himself because the earbug was controlling him. Remember that?
I'm going to say I thought he was the earbug.
He was the earbug for sure. No, he was the one he had to turn the phaser on himself because he knew if he didn't, he'd kill Kirk and those guys. It was kind of a valiant death. Yeah.
And what you're going to remember about that is that he was so sweaty. Oh, my God.
Very sweaty. Oh, yeah.
They must have had somebody just offset, like, spritzing these guys, like, in the face.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he had just taken off his helmet. He was on a dusty, hot planet.
Sure. Mm-hmm. He almost, He just died recently.
He almost died, but he didn't pass away,
which is a bummer, because that guy was pretty cool. But yeah, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, When the Walls Fell, that guy, he's great. Love him. All right, well done, as always. Let's move on to the soundtrack grade, which I'd give a T for terrible. I thought it was a really bad score. I think it's the weakest part of the movie. That was terrible.
I want to say that it enhanced my experience. I sometimes it was a little bit too much. It was a little bit loud and overrode everything else. But also I felt like, yeah. Now, this is a question I always ask. How are you guys listening to this? With headphones in front of a computer? Because I had it on the big screen and I had my surround sound kicking. And so I may have had a little different experience.
For me, it was headphones in front of a computer. That's the way I watched the whole thing. Yeah. I don't know if
it was still pretty good.
Big screen TV for me.
Yeah.
When it first got going, I actually wrote down, this sounds like the leftovers from Last of the Mohicans. I wonder if it's Trevor Jones.
It was.
And it was. You were correct. That's Trevor exactly Jones? What it was.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And it's not.
And
just,
It really does sound like the leftovers from the Last of the Mohicans. Like, there's parts of it where I'm just like, whoa, he's actually like referencing his previous movie.
See, and I love that soundtrack. I don't know why this one failed for me so hard. It just, every time I heard like an exciting scene, I went, this music doesn't match. This isn't very good. This is bad. What are you doing?
It would have been great as music to like Dances with Wolves or something.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Dance to, which was going to make me laugh.
That too. I could dance to this.
Oh yeah, baby. All right. Yeah. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum things up in 280 characters or less. I'm going to break with tradition. This has never happened, but we're going to start this time with Randy.
Cliffhanger. A whole bunch of men and only one surviving woman spend hours wrestling in the cold, and this one guy has a funny lip thing, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Wow. I even knew you were going there. It still got me somehow.
Yeah.
Still enjoyed the journey.
Still it was
pretty good. Brian Dunaway, you're next.
I'm going with or less on the character limit. Cliffhanger. Ain't gravity a bitch. Hashtag Gabe, hashtag no.
You could flip those. You could say hashtag no, hashtag Gabe.
Yeah.
Gabe.
Either way works. Finally, Brian Ibbot.
Cliffhanger. Here's what you do. You watch this, and then you quickly switch to the Weather Channel. Legalize it.
Right? Oh my gosh.
Nicely done.
By the way, I just want to apologize. The Sylvester Stallone lip thing is not It's not really that funny. Like he was, he was mishandled during birth.
Oh,
like
really?
Being born, a doctor injured him, and that's why he's got that.
Well, he has plenty.
He punches a doctor every time he sees one.
He did just fine.
Yeah.
You could argue he used that to his advantage, actually.
He did.
And when it was passing under the ice, it made me laugh. All right. Let's get to the alternative title here. Now, this had a really strong chance of these two other alternate titles. One was Yondu and Judge Dredd Stop the Footloose Preacher Dad, but that didn't last. That didn't work. So they almost went with Beavis and Butthead Go Camping Over the Worst Weekend Ever. All right, moving on. let's get to, they were kind of chicks in the bucket too, by the way. They were weird.
Yeah. They one of them's dead, right?
Yeah. And the other one's, I guess, one shop at night.
Critical condition.
Yeah. That was a pretty harrowing fall, by the way.
Yeah.
That had me going a little bit. Although he didn't yell enough. He kind of was quietly falling. I would have been screaming. All right, emails. We got one here from Kyle, who wrote into the show at filmsack@gmail.com and says, "Hey ho, sackers. I've been waiting for what feels like years for Mystery Men to show up on a streaming service. And it finally showed up right here on Netflix. Considering the slew of parody superhero movies we get these days, it is way ahead of its time and holds up as a pretty decent hero movie during a time when we are getting very questionable stuff. The cast includes Paul Rubens, William H. Macy." He wrote in parentheses, "I am cooperating, Wade." Nice. We appreciate that. And Tom Waits is pretty incredible. He didn't even mention like Wes Studi's in that. It's a great cast. Anyway, I think it would be a good sackable film. Cheers and popcorn, Kyle. I agree.
How come no one ever names Janine Garofalo? There was a time when she was so freaking funny in movies like this.
Yeah. I still like her. Mm-hmm. She'll show up in stuff here and there, and she's great. I ain't got no complaints about her.
Huge crush at the time, Claire Forlani is also in this movie.
Oh, nice. Wait, Claire Forlani.
Yep. Claire Forlani.
You're right.
I don't know that name. Hold on. Mystery Men. I'm looking it up right now because that's what we do. 1999's Mystery Men, saw it in theaters. Should remember this lady. I don't. Claire Forlani. Here we go. Oh, Greg Kinnear's Captain Amazing. I forgot about that. Lena Olin, Jeffrey Rush, Eddie Izzard. Holy hell, dude.
Yeah,
I can't find the girl you're talking about. Why?
She's like,
Monica, right?
She's one of the stars of Meet Joe Black, a movie that I've seen too many times.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
She. I had a major. That's why she's familiar. I had a major crush on her as well. Yeah, she's awesome. I don't know what I was going to say there when I said she's a. I promise it wasn't anything weird.
She's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, she's cool though. All right, so yeah, I don't see any reason why Mystery Men shouldn't have its day.
I think it is okay. So it is a comedy somewhat, but it has a lot of drama in it. So I think it could fit. It's not like a straight up comedy.
It's, you know what? It's exactly like Green Hornet. We sacked Green Hornet. We can sack this.
I would say it's a little more self-knowing fourth wally than that was. This reminds me more of like, what if The Boys was slightly funnier, but also not rated R? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's kind of got that vibe to it. It's real scrappy. It's based on a comic, a Dark Horse thing from back in the day.
Right.
I think we should totally watch it. So we'll get it on the list. Thank you, Kyle.
I vote for.
Yes. We've all voted. It is now just a matter of time. Next week, we're not doing that movie because we got Real Steel to deal with.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was going to be this week, but we bumped it for Cliffhanger. But it's still there. So we're watching it. Real Steel with your Wolverine there.
Huge Ackman.
And other people. The Wasp is in it. So
yes. What's her face? Evangeline Lilly from Lost.
Yeah. She's the Wasp in this. No, she's just a character. that is going to be great. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's notably a film that me and Brian Ibbett watched in 2011 in theaters while he was here in Salt Lake City for an event we did. And haven't seen it since then. And I don't know what to. I don't know what to think.
For me, it's notable because I couldn't have told you anything about this movie when you guys brought it up about a month ago. Up until about March 2021, I didn't know this movie existed.
Yeah.
Like I seriously, it completely missed me. And like I really kind of had a Mandela moment, like where I'm like, did I come from a timeline when this movie didn't exist?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't think it was like a monster hit, but I thought it was a really fun, feel good. time, and I thought the effects were cool. And in the shadow of things at the time, like the Transformers movies were such disappointments. It was just kind of nice to see something that was like a lot of CG, but had some heart to it. I don't know. It worked for me.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll see if it holds up. I have no idea if it'll hold up, but we're going to find out next week right here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com is the place you want to go in case you're trying to find anything else. It's all there. Try that link also that we use all the time, quicksack.ly. It's a great way to find out what we have seen. So before you come suggesting something to us, maybe check that, because a lot of times you guys are talking about
before
stuff.
Before you come telling us what we already know, why don't you go check that?
Yeah.
We also regularly hear from people who don't know what the next movie is and aren't willing to ever touch Twitter. Yeah. Twitter is like off limits to
you. Off limits to them, yeah. So yeah.
Exactly has that.
That's a good point. Also, one guy asked me if we would ever do Krull, and I just didn't know what to say to him. I didn't know what to say. It's like, yeah, it was our first episode.
I mean, yes, we might.
We would ever do it, yes.
Yeah. Would we do it again? Probably not.
I want to. I've said this before, guys. I want to do Krull again because I feel like that's the worst episode of FilmSack, and I want a second chance.
Well, I mean, it was totally we didn't have hardly any of our formulas.
No. Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing.
No, we had vagina caves. Yeah, we had vagina caves. It was a weird time. 2009 is a long time ago now. Turns out. All right. Yesterday I was doing the math. You probably saw this on Twitter, but No Doubts. Song. What was their big song?
Don't Sleep.
Spider. Oh.
No.
Oh, No Doubt.
Don't Speak.
Yeah, Don't Speak.
Don't something.
Yeah. So Don't Speak came out 25 years ago this week. And I got to thinking, all right, that was a huge hit. Gwen Stefani's still rocking it. She got a new album herself, doing good. Let's do a little backtracking. So I did the math. If you went 25 years from that song backwards to what the number one hit was. It was a version of Joy to the World by Three Dog Night in 1971.
I think I remember that
time one. Time is weird. Like if I say to you guys, hey guys, what was the hot Zelda game 20 years ago? Your brain would say, oh, like the original NES one? No, it was Wind Waker on the GameCube.
Right. Right.
Oh, we're all going to die. We're all going to die.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. So yeah, filmsack.com is the point there. And if you want to leave us these V-mails, no, emails. V-mails never
what are V-mails? I want a V-mail.
Vagina email. It's vagina email.
Oh, sweet.
Filmsack@gmail.com. Just don't do D-mails. I'm not into those.
Right.
Filmsack@gmail.com is the address to use. You can find us on Twitter. If you hate Twitter, I don't know what to do for you, but it's at Filmsack on Twitter. You can find all of us as well. I never mentioned these, but I may as well today. Coverville for Brian Ibbett over there. You got your Randy Deluxe for Randy. Brian is the Brian Dunaway, and I'm at Scott Johnson. And you can leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That helps us even now, 10 years later. It just still does. So don't stop believing. That's it for us. Thank you all for listening. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
I'm in here.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
No bullets, bitch!